Today on Maine Calling, Franco-American food traditions. French fries, hot gravy, and cheese curds that squeak when you bite in. This is the mouth-watering combo that makes poutine so popular, and is often what people think of when you mention French-Canadian foods. But there are so many more dishes, and most go back decades or centuries earlier than the invention of poutine. I'm Cindy Hahn. As Poutine Fest kicks off in Portland tomorrow, we discuss the many foods and dishes that Franco-Americans in Maine grew up eating. Whether it's a hearty tourtiere meat pie for special occasions, or yellow pea soup as comfort food, certain dishes represent the history and heritage of French-Canadian and Acadian culture, and are a delicious part of life and family and memories for Franco-Americans in Maine. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Some French-Canadian foods trace back to the pioneering days, like pâté chinois, and some are more recent creations, like poutine. And there are so many more, dishes that many Mainers with Franco-American heritage grew up with. We'll learn more about these rich culinary traditions. My guests today are Cecile Thornton, treasurer and advisory board member for the Franco-American Collection at the University of Southern Maine's Lewiston-Auburn campus, and Ken Terrio, director of the Madawaska Public Library, VP of Madawaska Historical Society, and a member of Maine Acadian Heritage Council. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have a favorite French-Canadian dish? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Ken, I'll start with you to get a little bit of history. I know there are so many dishes that do have French-Canadian origins. Give us some of the historical background to the days when some of these food traditions came about.
Well, I can speak specifically to the Acadians, who were not quite the same as the French Canadians who came to Maine from Quebecois. So we actually came after the Grand Déragement, they had called it, where the Acadians were dispersed all around North America, and then we started to reconstitute themselves. And they came to New Brunswick, and eventually from New Brunswick made their way up into Madawaska. Now, since the Acadians were dispersed all over the place, food traditions for Acadians after the Grand Déragement are almost as varied as where they ended up, because they tended to incorporate local ingredients, and therefore there was even differences amongst the Acadian communities that you might find in the southern part of New Brunswick and the northern part of New Brunswick and the Miquelon and the Cajuns in Louisiana even are part of that group. So specifically, when I'm talking about Acadian food, I'm talking specifically about the Madawaska area. I can speak somewhat to the Acadian traditions before the Déragement, but afterwards, the variations are so great that you would have to have probably 15 different people come in and talk about the types of food that they eat.
I encountered that problem in just trying to frame today's show. Every time I talk to someone, they're like, well, are you talking about this very specific, you know, little area or what? So, Cecile, you would differentiate those as well. The Quebecois, for example, totally different than Acadian foods, or just it's different?
Well, regions? I wouldn't say totally different, but I would say that there are some meals that are different. For example, Poutine in Quebec is very different from poutine in Acadia. And I have no idea how they make poutine in Acadia, but it's called poutine râpée, which is made with shredded potatoes and made into a ball. But that's as much as
Oh,
I
that
know
is
about it.
yeah, that is different.
It's actually shredded potatoes mixed with mashed potatoes, about a 50-50 ratio, and they put a piece of salt pork in the middle. They roll it up into a ball about the size of a tennis ball or a softball, and then they boil it. That
Whoa, that sounds.
is a Acadian. You tell an Acadian, "I'm having poutine," that's what you're eating. You're not eating French fries
Whoa.
and cream.
That's so
So
interesting.
now
Well,
I was going to ask if they serve it with a sauce or cheese
they
or anything.
have a variety of sauces. Usually, when you're presented with a ball of poutine, you're given several different choices. You put brown sugar on it. If you want sweet, you can put mustard on it. If you want more savory, they have molasses, ketchup, whatever you
Right.
taste
So no cheese curds involved either,
it. No.
huh? Well, we're going to hear a little more about poutine when the founder of Poutine Fest calls in a little bit. But Cecile, what then are some of the common ingredients found in a lot of these dishes? And, you know, I assume going back to what was available to people at the time.
Well, other than fresh out of the garden ingredients, which most people did garden in Lewiston anyway, you would have pork. Pork was in many dishes. Lard, because French Canadians, Canada is a cold area and people ate heavy foods. Just to stay warm, I guess you needed the extra calories. So those are the two ingredients that I think that and maple syrup are really, key ingredients in French Canadian cooking. But because a lot of the French Canadian immigrants were not rich, they were thrifty. They made use of their leftovers in a very good way and did not let anything waste. Like stale bread, we would make either French toast or bread pudding. My mother made an excellent bread pudding with chocolate chip that after she'd baked it, she'd take it out of the oven and we'd eat it with either marshmallow fluff or vanilla ice cream. It was yummy.
Now, isn't there a well-known bread pudding type dish with maple syrup as well?
Oh,
Is
there
it
is, but I can't
pudding
think of
chaumière?
it. Putting
I'm
some
going to
more.
butcher.
Putting some more. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to be butchering the French all throughout the show. Sorry. And that is also making use of the stale bread, like you said, Cecile.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Now, here in Madawaska, even though sometimes we're identified as Acadians, we're actually kind of a hybrid people. So some of these things are very familiar to me because we had Acadians coming north from southern New Brunswick. We also had Quebecois migrants meeting them in Madawaska, which was kind of in the middle. And we've kind of formed a culture that we can identify with both Acadian food and we also have some Quebecois food.
And I'm assuming, though, neither of you have mentioned seafood, but wouldn't that for Acadian culture be very central to the cuisine?
The Acadians actually didn't have much seafood until after the Grand Arrangement. Once they were scattered and their farms were taken from them, they settled a lot in the on the maritime coast, and then they became fishermen. They really weren't fishermen before that. They were farmers.
So, for both of you, did you grow up eating a lot of the foods from your heritage, or was it still, pizza and hot dogs and
Oh
things
no.
like that?
In my family, we ate French Canadian very much so. Yeah, Quebecois food. Saturday nights was baked bean night. The bean is what we called it. And always there was a piece of lard or bacon in the bottom of the pot before she cooked the beans. So yeah, and we had green beans and carrots and waxed beans cooked with a piece of lard a little bit in the pressure cooker. And it was always very cooked vegetables, very soft. Didn't al dente wasn't part of our vocabulary.
Hope
But
the
it was good.
nutrition didn't get cooked out of there.
Yeah, I can
Well,
say that too. Saturday night was bean night at my grandparents, and Sunday was usually a roast beef or a boiled dinner. And like she says, the vegetables were cooked in with the meat, and they were always very, very soft.
And do you think so the well-known Maine baked bean suppers, do you think that's where it, came from?
It's hard to know, really, because everyone says Boston baked beans, so whether it came from the South, but I mean in Canada, they in Quebec anyway, they have bibine, and the people down here called it bibine. And whether the bean suppers that were held by the churches came from that tradition or from the South, that is, I don't know. I suppose it depends on who you ask.
Yeah, so another dish that I've often heard about is the pea soup that is not with green peas, but with yellow peas, like a split pea soup. Did you both grow up having that?
Yes, I
I
did.
didn't. I
Okay.
didn't. Did you like it,
I'm not picky.
Ken? And
I like it now.
Yeah, is there any explanation for why it's the yellow peas instead of green?
Wow, I've never thought of it. I don't know.
But I'm
I
assuming
don't.
it's still it was whatever was available, but
Right.
and again, that very hearty, simple cooking was emblematic to the
Absolutely.
culture. Well, I like I said, we're going to talk more about poutine, but I do want to ask, it's kind of a love it or hate it food for a lot of people with the gravy. The one that I think most of us know is the French fries with the hot gravy and the cheese curds. And that making it all soggy. Some people like that and some people don't. I just wanted to hear your opinions about poutine, Cecile.
Well, when I first tried it, I thought it was weird, but I've grown to love it. But it's funny because poutine, and that's the way Canadians call it, it's poutine. In
Okay.
my house, when I was growing up, poutine was pudding. I don't know about
Oh.
Ken, but poutine hadn't been invented when I was little, or it was invented in the 50s when I was born. So we didn't know about it here in Lewiston. So.
Up here, we call poutine was often to Acadians, a poutine is anything made with that resembles or is made with a dough. So they call a lot of their pies poutine. Like a molasses pie is called a poutine à molasses. They also call poutine, well, whatever the dumplings they would put into their fricot, which we now know as a chicken stew. That's extremely popular in this area, especially. But they would make dumplings, but they aren't the round dumplings. They flatten the dough and they cut it into almost like a very large noodle, and they simmer it in the stew for the last 15 minutes of its cooking, and that they call that a poutine as well.
So I'm interested about the dumplings because it seems that every culture has some version of dumplings. I'm Asian, so we have our dumplings, right? And then there's I guess knishes and pierogies and all of that. Is that something that's pretty prevalent throughout the different cuisines that fall under French Canadian traditions?
I'm not sure if it's prevalent, but I mean, I think all French Canadian traditions do have meals, for like Ken was saying, where you put dumplings in the stew or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mom used to even put dumplings in a blueberry pudding that she would make. I'd forgotten all about that, but she would throw some dumplings in there, and that was lovely, actually. Yeah.
That does sound good.
I think you might be talking about what's called the croissade de bleuette, and that's like a it's almost like a blueberry pudding jam, and the dough isn't cooked on top or on the bottom; it's just dropped in the middle and kind of boiled.
Right. Absolutely.
The Acadians up here also make something like that called the baguette, but it's not the Cajun baguette where they fry like a donut. They make small balls of dough and they boil them in maple syrup, and they call that le baguette.
So it's not beignet, huh? That's not the right
Well,
pronunciation. Beignet.
I'm just wrong. I
It
don't know.
depends. It
It
depends who you
depends.
ask.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's just like how you pronounce names in Maine, right? It sort of morphs
Yeah.
over time. Let's go to Mike calling from Tennant's Harbor. Hi, Mike. What did you want to talk about?
Oh my God, I grew up with a grandmother that the only English that she knew was hello and potato chip. And she was a wonderful, wonderful lady. And I'll tell you, I can't tell you how this program is bringing back memories of drooling at the food that she was cooking. She used to make cretonne on a stove, and she would grind the meat and everything right there at the table. A pot roast, boiled dinner, all the root vegetables, potatoes, sometimes beets, but always turnip and carrots. And if we had them, green beans with cubed beef, oh my God, the beef would just fall apart. And every Thanksgiving, and usually at Christmas, we would have a turkey stuffed with that ground pork. And that was one of my favorite parts of eating at Thanksgiving, was that ground pork stuffing. And it's the same kind of thing they put in a tortilla.
Yeah, that's what I
But
thought. I thought that for Thanksgiving, well, at least Christmas, right? That then you do have a tortilla.
oh, absolutely. And it's still one of my favorite things. Mayotte's in Lewiston makes tortillas. They make cretonne and stuff. It's not exactly the same as my grandmother's, but it's very, very good. So the Mayotte's things, their stuff is really good.
Okay, my mouth is literally watering now, Mike. But what do you have you carried on the traditions? Do you make any of that yourself?
No, but my mom used to.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to cook, but I do a little bit more stuff, more traditional American style food for most of it. I remember growing up, of course, the French food wasn't real spicy, like with hot spices and stuff. The first time my second wife made Cajun spaghetti in Georgia, I was just tears rolling down my face, the heat and stuff. And I think I broke her heart because I told her I couldn't eat it. But it was the first time I'd ever had anything that spicy hot.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing your memories, Mike. That was great to hear what you knew and loved all those years. And interesting that you said there isn't really spicy food. Like that is one thing that is not part of the cuisine, right, Cecile?
That's correct. In fact, my mother's version of spaghetti or macaroni was usually something that was made in a casserole. She would pre-cook the pasta, then she would have some cooked ground beef or oftentimes ground pork, especially for the macaroni. She would add not tomato sauce, but tomato juice, or you could also use tomato soup, but she used tomato juice to it, mix it up, put Velveeta on top, because Velveeta was the pièce de résistance back when I was a child.
Yeah.
And yeah, and she would bake that, and that was how we ate spaghetti, was the casserole, spaghetti and meat and macaroni. Yeah.
Well, wonderful. We have so many other dishes that we want to talk about, but we're going to just take a quick break right now. We are talking about Franco-American food traditions. Our number is 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. What do you know about foods that come from French Canadian culture? These dishes have become part of life for many Mainers. Joining me, Ken Theriault is director of the Madawaska Public Library, and Cecile Thornton is with the Franco-American Collection at USM's Lewiston Auburn campus. Join the conversation. Are you a fan of poutine? What about plois? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. We did hear from another poutine fan. Let's hear now from Allie. She told us about her favorite Franco-American food and left us a message using our Maine Public Vox Pop app. So let's hear from that.
As somebody who grew up in Maine, I would have to say the first thing that comes to my mind when I'm thinking of French Canadian food is going to be poutine. It is super nostalgic, and I grew up eating it, and I'm sure a lot of other Mainers have, and it's just delicious. It is one of those comfort foods that people love, and poutine is where it's at.
And part of the reason we are doing today's show is that tomorrow is the Maine Poutine Fest in Portland. I understand extremely popular, and I think even maybe sold out. We were hoping to hear from the founder of Poutine Fest a little later today. Tim Beaulieu was supposed to be calling in, so we'll see if we do hear from him. But that is part of a big craze, I think, going on over these poutine festivals happening all over. Let's go now to a question from Dewey, email from Dewey. For today's show, would you ask the guests how they keep ploys from sticking to the surface of a pan? I have tried using oil and butter, but inevitably they stick, so I quit trying years ago. Yet when I order crepes, which are very hard to find in Maine these days, they never seem to stick. Why is that? And by the way, are there any crepe shops in Maine these days? So somebody help Dewey out, one of you.
I do know that if you're in the Lewiston, Auburn area, if you go to Raleigh's, Raleigh's Diner in Auburn, they have magnificent crepes. And you can have them served any way you want. I always get them served the traditional way, which is with butter, brown sugar, and real maple syrup. And it's to die for.
Mm, wonderful. What about the sticking tip? Do you have any tips for
my wife who is not, well, her mother was French, but she grew up in an Irish household, has come to learn to make ploys very, very well. And she says the secret is to let the batter sit for probably about 5 or 10 minutes. It gets very bubbly, because the ploy, when it's cooking, has to show the bubbles, the air pockets. The other trick is you have to have your grill extremely hot. Your griddle or your grill has to be about as hot as you can possibly get it, because these are going to cook very fast, and you don't flip them. When you put your spatula underneath them, you're taking them off the griddle. And then quite a bit of butter.
So that's very similar to what we know as regular pancakes. But tell us, actually, in case anyone doesn't know about ploys, Ken, what are they and where do they come from?
Ploys are a buckwheat pancake. Acadians knew of buckwheat pancakes the entire time they've been here, but Madawaska has kind of become famous. The St. John Valley, I should say, the upper St. John Valley, has kind of become famous for the ploy, because about 1850, their wheat crops failed over numerous years, but buckwheat is much hardier than regular wheat. So they replaced their wheat crops with buckwheat. So they had all this buckwheat laying around. So they decided to start making the ploys again, and the ploys actually took the place of bread. So ploys became ubiquitous in almost every single Acadian meal, breakfast, lunch, supper. It didn't matter. They were eaten as a piece of bread. They would put butter on them. They would put molasses on them. Eventually they came to like them so much, they would also eat them for dessert. So you would have dessert ploys with cream and berries and maple syrup, brown sugar, the usual culprits in Acadian and desserts.
Yeah, so sweet or savory, it's all good. And I understand they are still eaten.
The previous gentleman had mentioned creton. Probably the most favorite way to eat ploys is with a creton spread.
And what is that?
Creton is a ground pork and spiced that's boiled until it's very soft, and then put through meat grinder until it's about the consistency of a mashed potatoes, and it's kind of used as a spread.
It's like a pate.
Yeah,
so that's when every culture has something that might be a more acquired taste. Would that be the thing that not everybody Takes two.
No. Once you taste it, it's not an acquired taste yet.
Oh, it's good. Okay.
Usually it's where you can't get enough. Yeah.
It's a lot like Tutsier as far as flavor.
Right. Yes.
It's got the flavor.
Same spices. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Let's hear from Togue calling from Bath. Hi, Togue. Go ahead.
Hi. And actually, you set me up well because one of my favorite dishes of childhood was cresson. You've spoken about tourtière. When I was growing up, the kids couldn't pronounce it, so we used to call it tutke. And we would have tutke and eggs. You've got to try a fried egg on a slab of tutke, or you spread croissant on toast and have a soft-boiled egg on it. Those are just absolutely incredible. And another thing that I love from my childhood were tête de cerf, also known as nun farts or rosettes. And whenever my mother would make a pie, she'd roll out the extra pie dough and sprinkle butter and brown sugar and cinnamon on it, and then roll that up and slice it and bake it, and those were delicious. There's so many good memories here. Salmon pie, where you have canned salmon and mashed potatoes and a little onion salt, and you put that in a pie crust, and you have that for dinner with pickled beets. And the one thing that I think more people, like foodies today, need to discover is les herbes salées, salted herbs. And this time of year is when you want to do that. You take the green tops of onions and savory and parsley, and then you can put in carrots. And I've put turnip in it before, and all sorts of herbs, and you grind them up, and they last forever in your fridge, and they are the secret ingredient to the most delicious soups you'll ever have.
Whoa, lots of great, great, delicious sounding tips. Thank you, Togue, for calling in.
When people make herb salad, they also take the bottom part of the onion and they put it they jar it in salt water and they eat those, and they call those escherlettes. The Acadian.
And Cecile, you had thumbs up the whole time she was talking. What resonated with you from what Togue was mentioning?
Oh, it all resonated with me. It was really wonderful to hear what she had to say. And I can't remember
the salmon you thumbed
up. Oh, yes. So the salmon pie, that's something that we served almost every Friday. It was because Friday was fish day. So salmon pie was inexpensive because it was made with canned salmon, not fresh salmon, and always served with a white sauce at my house. I didn't like it, but anyway.
Okay.
Well, I grew into it.
Okay, we're going to go back to talking about poutine for a moment, because on the line with us now is Tim Beaulieu. He's the founder of Poutine Fest, and as I mentioned, it's happening in Portland tomorrow. Thanks for calling, Tim.
Salut, comment ça va?
I won't try to say, I know what you asked, but I won't try to answer. I think that, you know, we've talked about poutine being one of the best known dishes, and it's, you know, all over the world. Tell us how it came about.
The history of poutine. Excellent. So, you know, there's a big debate about this. So, you know, it comes to Centre du Québec, so the middle of Quebec, essentially. And there's a debate primarily between two towns, Drummondville and Warwick in Quebec. Basically, it was truck stop food. Someone, we don't know who, we're not going to pick one, came up with putting gravy on French fries and cheese curds. And, you know, it existed in Quebec, you know, probably late 1950s, early 1960s. And then over time, you know, the Quebecois embraced it, and then it was kind of looked down upon by the rest of Canada. But then when they found out it was cool, it became Canadian. And now poutine is, you know, a treasured Canadian delicacy. But obviously in our world, we do acknowledge it's a Quebecois creation, and it comes from the land of the Franco-Americans' ancestors.
So it really didn't become popular till, you know, quite a bit later than these other dishes we're talking about.
That's correct. And I'm not really sure why, you know, maybe because there was some stigma against Quebec. Maybe because, you know, if you don't grow up with it, it is kind of shocking to see sometimes. But if you think about how we eat anyway, we throw gravy and ketchup as Americans on everything. Uh-huh. So, you know, it just kind of fits. It's just a really great, especially in the wintertime or on a nice, you know, 70-degree day with a slight breeze in Portland. It's perfect food.
Wonderful. And tell us a little bit about the highlights of the Poutine Fest tomorrow.
Sure. So Poutine Fest is going to have, we have 11 vendors locally from Maine, as far north as Madawaska and as far south as Old Orchard Beach, with a good amount of vendors in and around the Portland metro area. Vendors, folks will come in at about 11:30. They get to sample them. We're giving folks, so we're really big on being French Canadian in our heritage. So folks get a big Poutine Fest shirt with our giant fleur-de-lis in the state of Maine on it with inaugural Poutine Fest. Some of our attendees get winter hats with that same branding and a backpack, all with the fleur-de-lis very prominently on the event. We're I don't know the right word to say it, but we're overtly proud of our French-Canadian heritage at Poutine Fest. We'll have French music from our DJ. We have a cultivated playlist of Quebecois music. We'll also have kids' activities. We have a face painter, animal balloons, coloring, word searches, some lawn games, and some really good beer provided by Thompson's Point.
Oh, my gosh. Sounds like a blast. Well, thank you for sharing that. Tim Beaulieu is the founder of Poutine Fest, happening tomorrow in Portland. And let's shift over to a call now from Dara, calling from Winterport. Hi, Dara. What did you want to tell us about?
My grandmother came from PEI, I think, then to Rumford, then to Millinocket. And she made a dish that she called potty. Now, I've never been able to look that up because I don't. But anyway, it was, she'd roll out like a cookie sheet-sized dough, biscuit dough. Then she'd cook a pork roast and a chicken roast together with, and a chicken together with onions and stuff. And then spread it out on the biscuit dough and then put another layer of biscuit dough and bake it. And it was delicious. And you could, you'd slice it up and, like, and have it for lunch or supper or whatever. And I'd like to know if anybody knows about that.
Oh, I wonder. Ken, you were nodding. Yes?
That's called put on put. And what it is, it's basically an Acadian meat pie. Like she said, you have a, whatever meat you have, they would use whatever they had left over from hunting, left over from slaughtering time, and they would have a large kind of Dutch oven or a baking dish, and they would layer the bottom with onions and potatoes and meat, and cover that with a pie crust, and then they would put on another layer of onions and meat and potatoes. And layer that with the pie crust until they ran out. So you would have a very large meal all encompassed into one pot.
Wow. And the ultimate one pot meal. That's so great.
It bakes in the oven for about 7 hours. And you have to continuously add either a broth or water so that the dough doesn't dry out.
Oh. Well, thank you for asking about that and sharing your memories of that, Dara. And let's now go to calling in. We have Patrick LaCroix on the line, and he is the director of the Acadian Archives at UMaine in Fort Kent. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for waiting.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted first to salute all the amazing work that Tim Beaulieu has done to promote the French-Canadian and Acadian culture, really the Franco-American culture, and Poutine Fest. It's been a long-running event in New Hampshire, and in Maine tomorrow, I'm sure it's going to be a tremendously successful inaugural event. But I was calling to talk about a different layered dish. It seems as though so many of our dishes, and, you know, coming from Acadia and Quebec, they're layers. And one of them that's really iconic, just as much as Poutine, is pâté chinois, or Chinese pie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that one is quite as popular in Franco-American households as patampad and some of the other great dishes that we've been talking about. But it's really interesting because this is another dish that's kind of shrouded in the mists of time. We're not sure quite where it came from. And the name Chinois or Chinese has led to all sorts of fanciful speculation. And, you know, for a long time, people thought that it had come from Chinese railway workers out in the Canadian prairies. That seems very doubtful. We don't really have any strong evidence for that. But I've been able to find dishes from the early 20th century that show that originally what eventually became known as pâté chinois had rice. And I should explain to a lot of the listeners who might not know, pâté chinois typically in Quebec is a pretty big, pretty hearty layer of ground beef followed by corn with potatoes on top. So over time, the rice got substituted by corn and by potatoes, by things that were a lot more accessible to Quebec, to Quebecers as a whole, to Quebec farmers. And it just became a great way of using leftovers. And during the Depression and the Second World War, of using up ingredients that were pretty cheap as well. So I expect that that might resonate with some callers, but it's something that's kind of part of our Franco-American heritage, but still much more associated with Quebec palates.
That's so interesting. And I actually believe the railroad worker part of it, because I know that Chinese railroad workers were often, the cooks for others that were working. And so some of the other dishes, like Chinese American dishes, came from that time too, like chop suey. So, it seems likely to me. But thanks for sharing that, Patrick. You also, I know, have some information about Quebec agriculture and how that relates to the current food traditions we see.
Sure, and I think Ken could speak even more eloquently than I could about all these great agricultural traditions, but he certainly shared one with regard to the transition from wheat to buckwheat, which, as he said, is a lot hardier. The same transition occurred in the 19th century with potatoes. The idea that poutine could have been made 200 years ago is also fanciful. It doesn't make any sense, partly because potatoes 300 years ago was still seen as something that you'd feed the pigs. And part of it was simply that the original, European settlers and colonists, they saw the potato in its native American, meaning the Americas, context, and they started eating the leaf. And leaf is very toxic to human beings and to some cattle. So they thought that potatoes would, of course, be, the potato itself, the tuber, would be equally toxic. So they just left that to the animals. But that changed, of course, over the course of the 19th century as wheat underwent these huge pressures, especially with the wheat midge and the Hessian fly in the first half of the 19th century. These are both pests, and these flies lay their eggs in the stalk of the wheat. And from the moment they burst out of the egg, these would just consume the entire wheat harvest. So that led to devastation. It led to also diversification in Quebec of using a lot of different crops, of relying a little bit more on buckwheat, but also oats, potatoes, as I mentioned. And increasingly, Quebecers imported their wheat, which was crucial to, to just about everything they made, certainly to their bread. So they imported their bread from, or their wheat, rather, from other regions in North America, and they increasingly turned to cash crops, one of which was corn, maybe not paradoxically, but interestingly enough. So corn and the dairy industry also popped up later in the 20th century. So we can't assume that agriculture remained static from the early colonial period to the 20th century until we had modernization. There were a lot of transitions, and some of them very difficult because people were losing their crops.
Oh, wow. So interesting. Thank you for sharing some of that background, Patrick. That was Patrick LaCroix. He is the director of the Acadian Archives at UMaine Fort Kent. And boy, so many calls coming in, people wanting to share their experiences and memories. Hi, Tina. You're calling in from Gorham. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Hi. I love this show. I'm a kid. I grew up in Biddeford, a little kid in the 60s. French family, both sides. My father's side, someone did the family history, went back to, I think, the first Rouelle, well, that's my last name, but going back to the late 1600s, so strong connections to Quebec. And my grandmother didn't speak English, but back in the 60s in Biddeford, pretty much most folks were French. You could hear French spoken in the shops, businesses, at home. I, for one, my sister and I were a little younger. Our older cousins all spoke French or bilingual. By the time we were born, it was kind of fading out. But anyway, I grew up hearing the French at the holidays, and it's that soundtrack I miss terribly. But my mother made everything from scratch, and she made fantastic crepes. And I would love them. She would get the the skillet, the iron skillet, the big one, put a little bit of lard in there, make the very eggy dough, cook that up, bubbling. It was just humongous, kind of greasy, right? Lovely. And we wouldn't have this for breakfast. This would be like a Sunday night dinner. Put a little butter in it and put the brown sugar and roll it up, and that was dinner. It was so filling. It was the best, tastiest crepe ever.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for sharing that, Tina. We do need to go to a quick break, and this is Maine Calling. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Are you getting hungry yet? We're learning all about Franco-American foods and dishes and what they mean to those who grew up with them. My guests are Cecile Thornton with the USM Franco-American Collection and Ken Terrio with the Madawaska Public Library. Share your questions and comments. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram. The lines are full, but you can try calling 1-800-399-3566. We're hearing from a lot of people giving Dewey advice on not having your ploys stick. So let's hear from Dennis from Mercer giving him some tips. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hi, yes. Although I didn't grow up with them, I've been cooking ploys for about 40 years. My kids grew up with them. And I've always followed the instructions on the side of the Bouchard ploy packet. And it says right in the beginning, preheat ungreased electric griddle. You don't have to use electric. But the secret is to get the cast iron griddle very hot and put the ploy mix on with nothing on it, and it won't stick. You let it bubble and then flip it over, and they're done.
Oh, thanks for sharing that, Dennis. And actually, we heard from other people, too, that, you know, like you said, get the pan hot. Don't use butter. Don't use lard. Vegetable oil works better. So lots of people who know how to make their ploys not stick. Thank you, Dennis. There's so many calls, but I wanted to hear a little bit more from you, Cecile and Ken, about any other favorite dish you want to bring up.
One thing I'd like to mention, when Dr. LaCroix was on, he was talking about pâté chinois. And that is actually something that, you know, we ate a lot of at our house. And I think it was very popular in Lewiston, Auburn. And also one lady who had a lot of comments that I really loved, and she talked about les pets de sel. And pets de sel translates to nun's farts. But I found out afterwards that that was really called pets de sel because it's the cells, the nuns were teachers, and these were teachers' pets. So I don't know if that's true, but, you know, there's all sorts of legends out there about French Canadian food.
Up here, we, at least I've read and or heard of, they called it pet de sœur because it was pâté, which was pie crust. And we were having a good laugh because it was funny to think of the nuns farting. So it went from pâté de sœur to pet de sœur, and you know you have a good laugh at the thinking about the nuns letting one go.
That's great. We talked about tourtier earlier. We'll hear now from Kristen Gagne. She was born and raised in Maine, and she founded KMG Foods, which makes Franco-American seasoning mixes. And she wanted to call in today but couldn't, so she recorded this message on Maine Public's Vox Pop app. Let's hear from Kristen.
I was born and raised right here in Maine. I'm a third-generation American with both sides of my family coming from Quebec. And growing up, for me, French names were just normal for everyday items and food, and still are for our family. I've had memes and matants and all the delicious food that we grew up enjoying. And one of those foods is called tourtière. Now, in our family, we call it tutke. Many of you also know it as pork pie. And it is a meat pie traditionally eaten during the winter and during the holidays. And while it's so delicious, it takes so long to make. And one day, my sister, who was out of state, told me that she wasn't able to make it for Christmas. And I just could not accept that. So I went online to essentially look for my product, and it wasn't there. So KMG Foods was born. And fast forward to today, we have created the first complete dried seasoning meal mix for tourtière. It has the potatoes and the onions, Yes, the potatoes and onions are in the mix, along with all the spices you need, and prep has been cut from over 2 hours to only 25 minutes, and then it's ready for the oven. So what we say is, if you can brown meat or meat alternative, you can totally have your own tortillera at home. Now this business, it all started by accident, but it has been so much fun. I love hearing everyone's stories about these foods and their experiences with them growing up and seeing these humble food traditions spreading their wings. Oh, it's been such a gift. So it's the best time. We love it.
That was Kristen Gagne. She started KMG Foods and she is going to be at the Maine Poutine Fest in Portland tomorrow. Let's see. Let's go to Beverly calling from Bangor. Hi, Beverly. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me on. And what I'd like to just contribute is I am Acadian descent as well as Quebecois. And during my venture to find out my roots, I ran into an Acadian cookbook and I found something in there that was like just a real gem. And I think it's related to the Berkeley's that was mentioned earlier. They, the Acadians would take green onion tops and chop them up and then layer them with salt. So it was, the ratio was like 5 cups of chopped onion tops and 3 teaspoons of salt. And they would layer that in a glass jar and preserve those onion tops for a year. You keep the jar in the refrigerator and take out that preserved condiment. And you can add it to soups and stews. It's absolutely wonderful in mashed potatoes, any type of salads that you would put like mayonnaise or salad dressing in. It's absolutely a wonderful little gem that I found. And I've passed it on to my granddaughter.
Wow, that's really great to learn about that. Thanks for calling, Beverly. And Cecile, I mean, this seems like it matches a lot of what you were saying. Is it, you know, things that keep well, things that are hearty over the winter, keeping something that way seems to make sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I did want to mention, if I could, about whoopie pies, which is Maine's dessert, along with blueberry pie, of course. Whoopie pies supposedly, according to legend, were invented here in Lewiston at Labadie's Bakery. And whoopie pies is something that I grew up eating. And I don't know whether that was common in all French Canadian homes, but in my home it was.
Yeah, great. I want to squeeze in another call. This is Johnny calling from Fort Kent. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I'm surprised that maybe nobody has talked about it yet, hopefully, but it's a fiddlehead. Which is something that we would pick growing up in the early spring. It's actually a fern in the summer, but in the early spring it's curled up, and we were taught to cook it really well. Like somebody had mentioned that too, that a lot of the greens were cooked just super super well done, and
sure,
with a lot of butter. That was really good.
That's great. But fiddleheads is because you have to, or else they're toxic, right? You've got to cook them right.
Yeah, you certainly, they're definitely taste better when they're cooked, cooked well. And the other one was, dandelion greens. I don't know if that was just specific to my family, but, my grandmother who's now 104, she's still in Fort Kent. So, but she kind of brought in some, dandelion greens, which you also have to cook super well, or else they're very bitter. You got to get those before the flour comes out, or else it's even more bitter. But just some cool stuff that they used to pick out in the Fort Kent and greater northern Maine area, I think.
Wonderful. Thank you, Johnny. It makes sense that people forage for foods in Maine.
I'm just about to say that comes from the great tradition of foraging. Mm-hmm. And dandelion greens, definitely, and fiddleheads, and they also use dandelions to make wine.
Right. I think we're going to squeeze a real quick question for you. Spending a lovely holiday, says Raul here from my home in New Orleans. Are we talking about the same Acadians that made their way all the way down south that settled here in Maine? And also, where can I go and taste some of these treats? So, Ken, 30 seconds. Can you answer that?
Acadians all come from the same place. So if you have Acadians in your background, you're You were from the what's now the Nova Scotia area, Acadia, originally from the early 1600s. Where you can go, probably the most famous spot up here for Acadian food is probably Dolly's Restaurant.
Great, good tip.
Princeville, Maine. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so much to talk about, but thank you both so much for joining us today. Ken Terrio is with the Madawaska Public Library, and Cecile Thornton is with the Franco-American Collection at USM's Lewiston Auburn campus. And today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. We also had help from Chris Bridges. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Visit the Maine Calling website to listen to past programs or to sign up for our weekly newsletter. And our Vox Pop app, Maine Public Vox app, Pop app, is another way to stay in touch with us. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.